the loving respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Sanghaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to shame myself. All formations are transient and nishcha. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without itself, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates illusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves its path, by compassionate awareness, life that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 gray prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, and in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi svaha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other. As the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Sunday morning groups are recorded and made available to monthly donors. What shall we look at this morning? Okay.
Well, there are two practices that I've been doing that are kind of coming together that I'd like to explore what I'm seeing around.
Okay.
One is I've been reading Zen Flesh, Zen Bones.
Mm-hmm.
The section where there's all the koans that make no sense whatsoever. and the email class, mm-hmm. where it's sort of a koan,
yeah.
life experience, right?
Yeah. Both designed to confound conditioned mind and offer us an invitation to the alternative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, then that brings in a third of our practice focuses, which is emptying the teacup.
Uh-huh. The year-long theme.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it dropped in that practicing with koans in general and these particular ways in particular is like learning to travel with a tesseract.
Uh-huh.
Like there's nothing, you know, if you're familiar with A Wrinkle in Time, it's like there's nothing linear about it.
Uh-huh.
And
so in other words, so if I remember correctly, a tesseract is something like, so it seems like to get from here to wherever, Andromeda or whatever that,
mm-hmm.
you know, closest galaxy is, takes X amount of time. But the idea of a tesseract is that time is an illusion and that actually we can be there in an instant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it feels somehow like this koan practice has a similarity there.
Yeah. At least, like, okay, so I just read one after another of these koans. Doesn't make sense. You know, and
I really love that. It gets that label.
Yeah.
Okay, no, that one doesn't make sense. No, that one doesn't make sense. No, that one doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, here's just one of them. One example of one. The student asks Joshu, "Why did Bodhidharma travel to China?" And Joshu answers, "An oak tree in a garden." No, like that's not even a sentence.
True.
And so, you know, I read like 20 of those, so I knew it wasn't. You bang your head, you know, okay, there's something going on here, and I'm sorry, I'm not very articulate about this, but it feels like the The koan, the practice with the Iman classes, we get is kind of has the same feel, in the sense that I know, because the guy that said, I'm not, don't answer the question.
Right.
Don't tell me why Bodhidharma went to China. And so my practice with it has been to just watch, you know, just we've been talking about, just let things drop in. And so what the two responses that I've had after the first one have been nothing, really, it would look sort of like that koan, like they don't have anything to do with what the, you know.
What the actual thing is that you're looking at. No, I asked him, why did he go to China? And you're talking about oak trees. Can you help me out here?
And so in a way, I guess, you know, we could say, well, it's because what I'm thinking is, as I'm reading others' responses, the mind is trying to link it to, okay, what was that issue about? It's trying to make those linear connections and follow the path. But the email class isn't laid out that way. Right. The responses aren't presented that way. Nothing about it is encouraging that linear thinking. And so I just keep watching conditioned mind over and over and over, trying to reestablish that way of viewing the world, or making sense, or traveling, or whatever.
Boy, that's so great. If I'm tracking what you're saying, that essentially you're having the experience that we keep hearing the class, and really all of that practice is designed to elicit, which is that conditioned mind will go about it, you know, so we come to practice. Conditioned, great, we can practice, you know, I can practice, And of course, it's going to bring the habitual orientation to practice, which is to try to figure stuff out, to line it up, to how does that go with that, and then let's see, what was that response, you know, all those things that you named. And if we're lucky and we're patient over time, we start to get that little crucial step back and see, oh wait, that's what we're doing this for, is to see that process attempt to perpetuate itself.
Yes. And what's just dropping in is, the word is the breath. So, let me see if I can unpack what that is saying right now, which feels like, getting back to the wrinkle in time image, if we're going to travel through a tesseract, there's something, I don't know, maybe you do hold hands or whatever you do, if we're going to do what you just described, you're going to, it's the breath.
Do you mean that it's a sense of, that gives us a place to anchor, for lack of a better word, but so it's very tricky to do what we're describing. Right, because from within that, you know, it's the old, you can't solve the problem from the same mind that created it. So that puts us in a very tricky position in practice. Because, I mean, that's exactly why koans are so nonsensical. Is it's attempting to support us to get in that one tiny glimpse outside the system. And so by having the breath, having the attention on the breath, and that learning that skill of that one-pointed focus, it gives us a shot at the intelligence that animates dropping in that other way of being, that other way of seeing.
Yes, precisely. That, what you just said, is exactly what was just dropped in the breath. That, that's the shot. That's the one-pointed focus. That's your, you know, whatever.
That's the
your isn't even the right word.
And
the secret passage way or whatever.
And you know, we know that. It's funny because just this morning I was looking at something similar. I'm sure, you know, the email class is eliciting it for folks. So the email class, for people who might not know, is the Socratic method, basically, where each person chose whatever they wanted to look at in their practice. And they're having a chance to exchange with the guide around, okay, here's the issue, and then the guide looks at, you know, sees whatever we wrote, and then offers us the next place to look. And then we, you know, sit with that, see whatever we see about that. And so, in looking at it this morning, what dropped in is that quote of, we all know what the right answer is, but we don't want that answer, so we keep asking questions. Right? And so, to me, it's that place of, we know that it's as simple as come back here, focus on the breath. Life's got it. The intelligence of animating is everything. We can't go wrong. We can't, nothing can happen to us. We're, you know, life is all of us, right? But, well, but I mean, you know, couldn't I, but I'm not sure about the, but just to have that discipline, you know, restraint and religious observance, that to me is a great, an enormous place of unconditional love, to be willing to come back to what we know is the way.
Yes, it is. And just one last little thing that was, I found so encouraging that I saw this morning was, so another a question has been put to me sort of in my own practice. The question is, what makes your heart sing? And so there was the condition, the minute I read that question in the email, it's like there was the, well, let's see. You know, and so there goes the condition. I'm going back to the past. What would make my heart sing?
Yeah.
Going to the future, what would I want to make?
You know? Yeah.
And what I saw this, the willingness was I was I actually was led this morning to re-listen to the chakra email classes just in succession, and zing, the attention just went right to second, the one on the second chakra, bringing attention to the heart, and it was and all of this other stuff we've been talking about this morning. It's like, oh, there's the willingness to look at it in a different way.
Yeah.
To not go and then write my little answer back and you know, go from there.
Yeah.
No. To and it felt like you know, the heart would get a sticker for that one. You know, like okay, good. Just like an encouragement. Like we really can look at things, and the applications are just enormous everywhere.
That
we can look at all of life in that way that we've been talking about this morning.
Yeah.
It's just so exciting.
Yeah, it really is. But so, you know, it's the what you're describing, it sounds like, is that we're training in the process of training. You know, so instead of getting places or finding answers or even finding an answer to what makes your heart sing, that with all of that, we're just learning that process of, I don't know, but the delight of the curiosity.
And I might even say training in the process of training for sure, but also training in the process of looking. You know, just how to look. You know, and just as a guide has been kind of saying frequently lately, that curiosity, to be curious.
Exactly.
Thank you,
Brian. Just a quick thing I wanted to first to I had brought up on Tuesday night, establishing a different relationship with my cat. And because I don't, I was on week four of the bamboozle, I don't have an alarm. I set an alarm three times a day.
Right.
So I decided to let my cat be my alarm. And I normally find this cat hugely annoying. And so I decided whenever the cat wanted to say, what came up was accosted me. That's the word. Whenever the cat approached verbally to just say thank you. And so I did. And you know, I like her a lot better. And it's so interesting because as the week has gone on, as I came to yesterday, but the conditioned response was, well, that's over.
I was going to say, it'll be interesting to see what happens
next.
Okay, we're done with that week.
That's right, not with that cat. So anyway, but it was just so clear, you know, that it's all just projection. And it's just fascinating. You know, like,
and it's so perfect, isn't it? Because I really see that theme in the email class responses. That, you know, so often people write back in, and they're nailing it. You know, seeing the thing. And the guide's response so often is, okay, so how are you going to practice that? You know, because we know, we have a sense of it, and yet being willing to keep practicing it. You know, even when that assignment for the week is done.
Right.
But being willing to stay in that process.
Yeah, because the condition process is...
Exactly.
Nailed that one.
Yep.
And so, picking up on what was just referred to, what you were just talking about, so in my experience with the email class, the guidance has been, you know, basically how are these choices made, essentially? Mm-hmm. How are these choices made? Mm-hmm. And where to invest oneself? Mm-hmm. And so, actually, out of the discussion on Thursday night, I was looking at a yes I had said to something, and realized that I don't know where the yes came from, you know? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know whether it was spontaneous life, mm-hmm. or whether it's just such an old habit to say yes in that kind of situation that I have no idea.
Okay.
And so then yesterday, in the course of a conversation with someone, I realized that there were two more yeses that came up. And after the fact, I thought, where did those come from?
Okay.
And you know, I had no idea.
Okay.
But but I really sort of got that. I really got the movement out of, was that the right yes or the wrong yes, to simply, where did it come from?
Yeah.
And what a different place. Mm-hmm. It's so much more open.
So
much more open place. And there's no judgment in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it came from. And my next question, so then I thought, well, I'll watch. You know, let's watch. And then my next question is, can you watch without there being a watcher?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I don't know.
Right. Yeah, we did talk a little bit about that on Thursday, didn't we? Yeah. That's such an interesting place. So you drop into, it sounds like, a place of curiosity. So outside of the duality of wanting to, you know, mm-hmm. figuring out whether I'm right or wrong, and just into that place of curiosity, which feels so often like where we're being pointed to in practice, that how mm-hmm. instead of the what.
Mm-hmm.
And then that second column with it is, what is that process without the I doing it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the process of seeing it
mm-hmm.
without there being somebody there seeing it?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just watching it. Something is watching it.
It's funny, I just saw a belief come up that somehow it's not fair to talk about the email class in the group, that it's something you have to figure out on your own.
Oh, God, it's kind of cheating.
It's kind of cheating. Which is pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Which is,
That's one of those that we suddenly flash across our whole
life. Yeah, don't ask for help.
Not only don't ask for help, but it's actually cheating somehow.
Exactly.
Ask for help.
The only way you get any credit for anything is slogging through it alone, unsupported, and
can't we all relate? I mean, it's such an ego place.
It is.
I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah. Which is never
going to
talk about suffering.
Right, because I doesn't want to figure it out.
Yeah.
I just want to isolate the human in attempting to figure it out.
Yeah. So, and maybe that just answers the next part of it. I've been looking at this. What is it that just keeps engaging over and over and again with the voice?
Yeah.
You know, it's like
it is amazing.
So I had this image this morning of being in a prison cell
mm-hmm.
with the torturers with megaphones standing over, just yelling incessantly,
mm-hmm.
"What a screw up! What a horrible person you are!" And the whole time the door is open,
and
you can get up off that stool and just walk out in the sunlight.
Yeah.
And what is it that keeps the person sitting on the dang stool?
Yeah.
You know, and the one thing I saw was, well, I could stick my fingers in my ears, and you know what? And then I thought, that's still engaging with this thing, you know, because you're like, no.
In other words, just staying in the room.
Staying in the room with my fingers in the ears. You know, I'm not going to listen to you. So the next thing I saw was maybe the clearest thing I could see was I could see the use of laughter, because
mm-hmm.
if one could laugh,
mm-hmm.
get up off the darn stool and walk out and just make a big bow and say thank you for, for showing me the way. I'm out of here. I'm not coming back. I'm not sitting on that stool again.
Yeah.
you know? And so it's just a curiosity to me. Yeah. What keeps engaging, yeah. You know?
Yeah. And do you have a sense when that's going on, so when you're the one sitting in the prison cell and the voices are shouting at you, is it your sense that as you're sitting there, you can see that open door? Are you aware of the open door as you're sitting there?
Not always. Mm-hmm. Not always.
Yeah, because that was one of the things that I wondered about it was, is it so often that we're turned in the wrong direction, and so we don't see the door?
Interesting.
The door, you know, it's the birdcage, where the bird's looking out the, and in the picture, it's completely open in the back.
Uh-huh.
But does it require that shift
to
turn around and see that the door's open?
Yeah, that's great. Because it's not like just sitting there with that, looking at that wide open door and the sunshine.
But no, I'm
It seems to be that, just facing a dark corner in that room.
Yeah.
And thinking that there's no other reality except that.
You know, occasionally I think we all find ourselves in that place, sort of that, you know, know that I'm right, they should, you know.
Yeah,
I could be happy, but I'm right and they're wrong, and so I'm going to hold, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Has more that sense of I can see the door, but I'm not walking through that stupid door because, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But often not being aware of the door
when
we're in the middle of that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But sort of that more that image of, you know, whatever that book is, where so metaphorically you're in a room and you know there's a door, you know intellectually there's a door, but where is that darn door?
Yeah.
To me, that's that place of where we just diligently practice, and then that place of surrender where, okay, well, here I am, I'm in this room. And I hate it, and it stings, and that's all right, who could blame me, you know, this is when we do the Zoom recording, and we just start in.
Yeah.
We focus on the breath.
Yeah.
We choose a breath mantra.
Yeah.
We do two-handed recording. Yeah. We, you know, read the peace quote. We sit on the cushion. We, with that great faith of, sooner or later, I won't be in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll see where that door is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, and it's most often the situation you just described, and you know, and when I hear you talking about that, it's what I get from that is just that place of acceptance.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Acceptance, compassion, because at least for me, there can be that next layer of why are you sitting on that stool?
Yeah. Exactly, and that's what I can see. Yeah, that. Boy, that's where it gets folded back in over and over and over again. You know, it's like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, you know the math. You should be able to do it.
Yeah.
You should be able to get out. It should be, you know, fail safe.
Yeah.
You know, it should work every darn time.
Right.
And if it's not, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where you mentioned earlier the sense of humor, that the sense of humor can be of such huge assistance. So there we are in the room, like, wow, really? Again, that's amazing.
That's
kind of impressive. You know, because I really know there's a door here.
Yeah.
You know, and I've tapped into the level where this is not a mystery to me. And there I am. All those things.
Yeah.
Because to me, when we do that, what we're actually training for, it's such a subtle thing, but what we're actually training for is it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we train in that process, it doesn't tend to hang around for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does, we don't think that something's gone wrong or that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And so all we're doing is we're building that skill of essentially learning how to exit the dark room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if we're in that other process of why does this keep happening? What am I doing that... Then we're training in a total, you know, not such a helpful place, potentially.
Right. Yeah. All we have to offer people is how to keep getting sucked back in, you know, instead of, you know, this has happened to me as well over and over again, and this is what I've found.
Right.
it assists, and this is what I found, doesn't it assist?
Right, right. And, you know, sometimes the, you know, the quote assistance we are to other people is simply being an example that it's possible.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, so there we are, two people in the room, you know, can you show me where the door is? Technically, I actually can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I can show you that there's a door,
mm-hmm.
that it's possible,
mm-hmm.
and model that I'm willing to do it over and over and over. But really, each of us has to find that door for ourselves.
I know. It's just, can't you just take me to the door and open it, please?
Yeah.
You know, and it just, yeah. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't.
It doesn't work.
And even if it did, it doesn't give us the same experience.
It doesn't. No.
Yeah.
No. No, I mean, I go back to parenting.
Yeah, exactly.
You just can't do it for them. It's so hard that, you know, they just have to stumble along. And because it would, if you did it for them, it would be.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. So, anyway, okay, great.
Yeah. Thank you. Susan.
So I was looking, so there's a, I don't know if you've ever seen that, after Ram Dass had his stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching this film one time, and he said the most astounding thing to him was that when he fell down and was looking at the pipes, he had zero thought of God or the breath or anything.
Uh-huh.
Which I've always found quite comforting.
Yeah.
So I got some information this week that's perfect for ego.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of those, like, here's the good news, here's the bad news, but we don't know.
Uh-huh.
And I had this experience, and I thought of Ram Dass a lot, and when Scoria was sharing, truly of sensations coursing through the body and absolutely zero interest in anything spiritual.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Zero, nada, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All I was able to do was feel the sensations coursing through the body. And try to stay with that, because of course then what happens next is they're labeled some emotions, and then all these stories get going, which of course is what happens. But
can I just say something with you so far?
Yeah.
So you got this information, and so the sensations were coursing through your body really strongly.
Yeah.
And are you saying that you were aware of all that was available to staying with the sensations?
Yes, but I don't mean in a real super spiritual way.
Well,
it's interesting,
you know, when you're describing
it,
I'm thinking,
it's kind of like in a tornado. Yeah, I think, see, here's the thing. I think you're right. That's what I'm seeing. So what practice wants to do is say, if you were really spiritual, you would be doing something that would make this stop.
That would result in something.
Right, right. But it was sort of like the weather. You know, we talk about the weather a lot. You know, it's going to pass at some point.
Right.
I mean, it might be a long storm or a few days in a fire, you know, but something's going to shift at some point. And actually, there's no need to do anything about it.
Yeah.
The only thing you have to do, and then when Sequoia was talking, it certainly felt like a dark room. But when she was talking, I thought, I wonder if there's even a room.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It has a door. Because right, it's supposed to all be illusions.
Right.
Maybe ego is telling me this is bad and dark.
The information.
Well, no, the stories.
Okay.
No, this
okay
is bad. So the information, then, you know, the sensations, then the, I mean, even someone said, would you like to pray? And I said, no.
Okay.
So I just said, no, breathe, listen to your research. I said, no, actually, I am not interested. I can't write this second.
Yeah.
Because this is too, anyway, but as I was, then of course what happened right after that for the next couple of days was the stories that go along with the information. Because of course, there is very little information. There's only enough information for ego to love it.
To love it.
I mean, I just can't even describe seeing that. So then what seemed to happen was that, I mean, I can relate with that kind of, there you are, where there I was, and, you know, I've got this minimal information that's not great, and the sensations that are going on in the body, and then ego starts in with its torturing, so to speak, with its chamber, you know, with its stories. Well, what about this? And if this happens, what about that? You know, then there would be this, and then that. No, maybe, and no, you know, just the whole thing starts to happen. Of course, none of it's true. I mean,
so in other words, it's starting to build the illusion.
It's starting to build
the
illusion,
yes,
of the imaginary room. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the only thing that seemed to work, or I don't know, work, but the only thing that seemed to be comforting to whatever was going on, you know, that didn't, well, I don't even know how to describe it, except that was when I said, this is just it. Oh, I thought of, except I couldn't remember exactly how you say it to yourself, but it was something like, of course you'd be feeling this way.
Yeah, look at my name.
Right. This is like a normal response to this kind of information.
Right.
And the stories are not the normal. Well, but they are in some way, right?
Yeah,
to the
exactly, because they're happening.
Yeah,
they're
it sort of felt that way. That if there was no resistance,
yeah,
if there was no
exactly
wishing,
yeah,
that the whole karmic thing wasn't happening,
yeah,
then there was some relief in that.
Yeah.
It didn't mean it stopped.
Right.
I mean, it took a few days, and then I got another piece of information that I think assisted it in slowing. I don't know, actually. Except that if there was just kind of, I think the word acceptance was used.
Yeah.
Because what ego does is come in and tries to make things spiritual.
That's exactly where I was going with this.
You know, if you were the right spiritual person, and believe me, I have 1,000 spiritual friends, right? So if I'm just doing the right thing, then I would want to pray.
Yes.
And I would want to go meditate.
Yeah.
And I would just embrace this information.
And you know, I don't know if this is tracking what you're saying, but to me, what I hear in that is I would go up into my head.
Yeah, absolutely.
And think about this. Yes, let's pray. Okay, good. Let's go meditate.
Yeah.
But sort of this, I mean, it's so funny what gets labeled spiritual and not spiritual, right? I mean, I didn't hear that about last thing, but I would be fascinated to ask him more about that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have any, quote, spiritual thoughts. Well, what does that mean? Was I just right there with what was happening?
I think that's where
you have thoughts about, this is completely fine. You know,
I'm not paralyzed. Yeah.
That's ego using spiritual language to take me away from the direct experience, which in I project, the reason it does that in those instances is it's such a powerful moment of us being alive.
Well,
it puts us right up against existence.
There's that Zen story, you know, about the teacher and the student, and his favorite student dies or whatever, and then when he sobs and throws himself on the coffin, and you know, everybody's like, oh, get a grip. But I did, I was thinking that, you know, this is how it feels to be alive, without intellectualizing or figuring out or trying to get a hold of myself or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It is uncomfortable to ego to be alive.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
yeah,
what it puts me, ego, I don't know who actually, but there is a deep awareness that gets broadened again once more that the truth is I'm not in control of any of this.
Right.
And then there is a movement. There is. It's like that razor's edge. There's sometimes a movement into the relief of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like, oh my gosh, what a relief! I could just rest in.
Yeah.
I don't know,
and
and there's something. There's great compassion bigger than this that holds it all.
Exactly.
And kind of like you said, you were saying something to Sequoia about, you know, I don't know what you're saying, but it was soothing. Or there's the falling the other way into, you know,
right.
Well, God's not always done a good job.
Exactly.
My God's not always thought it should.
Yeah.
So I've got to, you know.
Yeah. But just resting in that place of, boy, I don't know. I don't have the big picture. And I am so not in control.
Yeah. And then when the sensations arise, whatever they are, they're just sensations. They don't mean anything.
Yeah.
But
They're just sensations. And do you want to pray right now? No, I don't want to pray. Do you want to sit? No, I actually don't want to sit. Right. You know? And there's a way in which when we just stay here, and it's so tricky to talk about, because even that, okay, I'm going to stay here.
Right.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to stay present. But when we just keep paying attention, there's so much revealed in that. And there can be such a sense of just staying with Susan through all of it.
I think the thing that I know, anyway, that we've talked about doing, which is sort of saying out loud the process of what's going on.
Right.
So rather than, I hate you or whatever, you know, I know it's my mind making up a story about how I hate this situation. And, you know, then I see that actually it's not that bad because I have all these friends and all these people and all this support. And then the truth is, you know, I actually don't really feel like praying or doing anything spiritual, or sit here and stew for a minute.
Yeah.
But then it's not stewing.
It's tricky.
Because on the other hand, I do still feel it's imperative to show up for the schedule. So it's not like it was scheduled for me to pray or sit at that time.
That's important.
Right? But I mean, the bell rings, it's time for meditation,
yeah,
I'm
for
still
sure.
going to go.
Absolutely.
Right? It's
that
not
was,
like,
that,
then I don't feel like it because I'm
right.
going to take care of myself because that was my meditation.
Yeah, if we were on retreat, I'd be saying, let's just stop and underline that.
Yeah.
That's a huge distinction.
Yeah, they're two different things.
Two different
right. It's tricky.
For sure.
It's really why we need to come to places like this. And
say
it out loud.
Yeah. To me, that place that you're talking about is, you know, ideally we're not in a conversation, right? We're not in a conversation with a conditioned mind. When something like that happens, it's incredibly tricky to stay out of the conversation. So, you know, a nice little guideline is, okay, well, if I'm going to have a conversation, it's going to be out loud.
Right.
So I'm going to say out loud, either to myself, to the reporter, to whoever, you know, around me.
Whoever's right available.
Right. Exactly as you're saying. Here's what's going on, and blah, 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 and I'm deciding, you know, I don't feel like sitting right now, and this is going on, da, 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 da. It's a much better way to go, because immediately, as soon as we're not talking, we're back in this conversation.
I noticed it got me at night, the worst.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a lot of, now that we're talking, I think I'll just try putting my recorder there and just, well, no need to sleep, because I'd rather be talking in my recorder than, you know, staying awake listening to this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, so huge. The conversation's really good today. Last night we saw a play, and it reminds the koans process of, and there was a character in the play which was crazy, and he would use Beatles lyrics from songs to blurt out. And if he started to pay attention, he actually made sense.
Yeah.
But all this other language, you know, words that didn't make sense around it. And it reminded me of koans because it was like he was the most humorous, fun person in the play and also had like meaning behind what he said, you know.
Yeah.
But when the play first started, I was like, oh my gosh, she's crazy, right?
Right, right. Oh, it's such a perfect metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Zen fool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was the Zen fool in the play. And sometimes that's, like, to me, the guy models that sort of thing in a different way, of course. But,
in whole offering that perspective that to conditioned humans feels like, what? You know, okay.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Exactly. Or she'll say something and I'll just be like, wow. Did not land. and to take it and look at it and see.
Yeah.
Or it punched ego, right? Or it got ego somehow and it's like, ouch, you know?
Yeah.
And then when I realize it's not me, it's ego, then I'm
exactly.
It opens up something new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I've been looking at is real similar. Is the that it's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether it's people's opinions or if they feel bad or
mm-hmm.
you know, and just taking on that whole level of responsibility that isn't mine to take or
right.
even have anything to do with me. You know?
Right. Right, and take is such a good word there, isn't it? Because it almost is a taking that which is not given.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, well, mine is a big boy, some of the advocacy and their life experience, and they are, yeah, it's not mine.
Right, right. And so just, I've been really practicing with it, or at least looking for ways to practice with it, I would say, because ego first gets in there and says, well, okay, how do you change this? How do you, you know, I hear things like, you know, work on yourself first or something that's like, okay, that just throws me into a big, like, suffering thing because, okay, well, how can I do this? And so that's ego, you know, going, how can I do this? How can I not make it all about me? And yet it's talking about itself.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So, in other words, instead of it being an inquiry, it becomes self-improvement.
Yeah.
So I've identified the problem, and now I need to fix it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It feels like there's this real heartfelt desire
for sure
to make a change in that respect, you know, not be so susceptible to what people think or to what, you know, what was the other thing I said in that one? You know, to making it all about me, not to be so susceptible to that, or taking on responsibility for other people's feelings and that sort of thing. Yet, the koan, it is a koan to not know how to do that. You know, like, to just practice and let it go to a certain degree. And just, you know.
And as we do that, I think this is what Rebecca was pointing out earlier, one of the things inevitably we got to look at is how ego takes that process over. How it pulls it back into making it all about me, that I'm trying to transcend making it all about me.
Yes. Yes, and then on the other hand, there feels like there has been movement in terms of feeling that release of it a little, you know, and it's slow, but it's not, but it's still better than it was, right? So it's like, okay, I don't know how to do it, and I just keep looking at it, and then something starts to happen where it's, all of a sudden I'll be in a situation and I'll realize, oh, I'm not so focused on me, or something.
Well, because if I'm following what you're saying, it sounds like there's sort of, and I think this is true for all of us, there are these two tracks. Mm-hmm. So you become aware of something like that. Whoa, you know, it's all about me. There's a huge amount of freedom just in the awareness of itself. And then it occurs to us, well, I mean, even in that awareness is the other way, right? So then we begin to look at that. We begin to practice with that. And then the other track is just the ego track. How am I going to make that back about me? Well, I'm going to try to make headway with it. I'm going to see if I can change and make it better. And right. But meanwhile, there's still the practice track happening, right? Where we're just watching it. How does that happen? That's so interesting. And not without any need to have a result, without thinking that there's anything wrong with it, but just simply being curious about the. Okay, so the next time I'm in that situation, I'm just going to watch, you know, all the stuff, you know, Sherry always talks about. What are the sensations? What's going on? How do I get talked into it? And that from that process, it does change. Not because we need it to or we think something's wrong, because it just does. With awareness, everything shifts.
Yeah,
and this other process is just there to try to slow it down.
And hold in on itself.
Yeah.
Kind of keeps taking it over again or something. And yeah, what you're saying, I think it's like awareness and curiosity and saying, I don't know, show me, you know, whatever you say, however you say it.
Yeah.
I'm here, I'm present, I'm here
ready for any insight.
I'm here for the for whatever comes. And letting it all go over and over and over again. Because it's conditioning is like the opposite of the way life works, so just to keep dropping it, and the I don't know opens it up to see how life works.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
just to be open to see how it works.
Right. And one of the other processes it does is it wants it to change fast.
Yeah.
What can I do right now to get this to change?
So outcome oriented.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And because, you know, we have that thing of the process is the outcome. So if it can get us focused on the outcome, then we miss the process, which means we miss the outcome. Right? Because if the process is the outcome, Right. What a coup to get our attention away from the process, which is the only place we actually experience the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and what it is, and life works like as a process.
Yeah.
And so it's doing things every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's the little things every day. And I was reading this thing where someone learned a new language by doing it 5 minutes a day. Like they learned fluent, I don't remember the language, but they learned fluent like French. 5 minutes a day. Well, that is the opposite of what conditioning does. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is the complete opposite.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Boy, and you know what I just saw in that, Renee, is what would be required in that is if you spent 5 one-pointed focus minutes really never back on anything, it would totally change your life.
Yeah.
Instead of what I project happens to people is I'm going to spend 5 minutes, right? Most of those 5 minutes is spent in a conversation about how this is a total waste of time. You're not going to learn language for 5 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, blah, 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 blah. So there's no learning happening. So you don't, quote, learn the language in 5 minutes. But if you truly, for those 5 minutes, completely focus on Japanese, wow.
Yeah. Because that, I mean, it's compound. And and it's such, you know, that and it all being about me, those two things are what I'm practicing with. And just doing little things, practicing, I want to emphasize the practicing part of that. You know, because it's like, you know, no, I don't do that. Like, you know, I'll start a few days and then it'll stop. And then, and then I'll go, oh, wait a minute, I'm on to something else, right? Even if I wake up from it.
Yeah. Celebrating like crazy when you do it, when you don't do it, realizing it, taking it right back up, celebrating that you picked it back up.
Just really appreciating being in group. I was just watching this process of being in group, which is, you know, something that maybe I want to look at.
Okay.
And then people start talking. And then there's insights that start coming in, like listening to them.
Yeah.
And there's this process of fitting that into what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
And the image that came up was like, like from this guy, insights are coming in, and at some point they get caught by we've used the image of little blue gnomes or maybe like gremlins, catch the insight, and they start putting him in place like a train, like a really long train, but there's a start and there's an end, and there's kind of these, you know, maybe there's like one train car that's like, you know, things being. Resources being taken someplace. Another one's like a passenger. Mm-hmm. But when you look back, it's like a story.
Uh-huh.
And so it just takes the insights, constructs them into something linear.
Yeah.
That's a story that can be told.
Uh-huh.
And my attention has, you know, right now, is goes to that.
Right.
The insights are no longer insights.
Right.
They've been taken over.
Yeah.
And that's where the attention goes.
Yeah.
And believing, I'm paying attention to insights.
Uh-huh.
My attention's on life.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to report on that.
Uh-huh. Wow. And it sounds like what you're saying is actually my attention is on the story.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And just the construction of the insights into a language that I can then be as someone to talk about.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow.
It's just a stunning, I mean, everyone's been talking about it this morning. It's a stunning version of, really, ego's in a hard place when we're practicing. Right? I mean, what's it going to do? Well, it's going to kill it. And the way that it kills it is that's a perfect example of it. So here are these insights, just dropping in life, just that process of the intelligence that animates, just flowing through, turn into cars, make it into a story, turn the attention to remembering that story so that I can report on it, and presumably get something from it.
And I heard earlier saying, you know, we know the answer, we just don't want that answer.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is just to drop it off.
Right? That's a good train.
It would be really great to say that. Okay,
I mean, those other trains, those were, but this one.
This train. Yeah. Wow. and to have that mirrored back to me out of this, you know, gosh. So, but when I dropped all that, then what I heard is, what do you really need to talk about? And then what arose was, you need to talk about the thing ego doesn't want to talk about. And that is communication, which is something we're working on. And I'm working on an email class, and I just just feel all the resistance to right now to even to announce that's what I'm looking at. And the other thing that the total resistance piece is, one of the things that goes on here, the identification that goes on, well, one is, I'm just realizing there's almost a constant duality about whether to communicate or not. About anything and everything. Big things, little things, And one of the ways that the identification has, quote, coped and is now just sucking up life energy is to, I'm not going to communicate, and because I won't get what I want, or they won't understand, or just be easier, be wasting people's time, all that. So then there's just an identity who goes around and is going to do it anyway, and is going to be sneaky about it.
Instead of communicating, it's good. So it's not like, okay, I just won't do the thing because I can't communicate. I want to cut out the communication piece, but keep the action.
Yes. Yeah. Which,
oh boy, that's perfect healthy.
It's awful. It's really awful. And then, of course, total freedom to expose that and to, well, it seems like what's happened is just in exposing that and practicing with it, there's more of an alignment with life. And then communication is just happening. It's not even like, well, I know I'll do a behavior change, and every time that comes up, I'll communicate.
Right.
It just occurs when you disidentify.
And
I guess I just need to communicate about it again, because that I watched that happen. I watched that alignment with, like, I watched the communication just increasing, like, huge for this person. And then the email class assignment got turned in, or the submission, and then there was like a the attention wasn't on the awareness, on the practice of going to where the guy goes, and then I felt it go right back into. And I just started to watch. It's not even the behaviors all the time. It's the conversation of, you're not going to communicate about it, and here's what you're going to do to get what you want. That is so, it's going on so much. And so it's just as, almost it's just as awful as actually doing the behavior and getting beat up. I'm getting beat up for having a conversation about, I'm not going to communicate. Here's how you'll get what you want. We've got a good plan here.
You just walking the human to the gallows, right? And it reminds me again of that theme that I feel like is really coming out in the responses in the email class that we looked at earlier this morning. So you see it. You have this really powerful awareness. And just from that, the behavior starts changing. And then you turn in the email class assignment. And then there's, as if it's sort of like a, okay, now we're on hiatus from that. And so there it regenerates. It just goes right back to the... So there's that poem that I think is there for all of us, is how do we live in that place? You know, not because there's an assignment, or because we're looking at such and such, or we're rinsing our teacups, or we're... But because it's who we are.
Well, that's what came up, is just what we talk about. You just can't leave the attention on presence at any moment, because there's this well-constructed machine, the karmic machine, I just described that in this case, that's just waiting for energy. And all it needs is for you to put your attention on that machine, and it starts cooking up again. I mean, it's ready to go at any moment the attention turns to that. So it's that leaning in, and we're not stopping communicating. We're not stopping. I wrote the questions on a big piece of paper on my wall in my hermitage. We are continuing to use these questions. Not the ones from two times ago. It's not like we're done with that process of letting the questions come in, seeing it drops in. We get to just stay on that edge. You got just like, no, you come back into this warm, yucky blood,
Oh boy, that really is the rural place, isn't it? Just staying here, staying here, staying here. And realizing that's what serves me. That's what I actually
so
want.
So clearly that's what serves me. Yeah, so it's just, we know what to do.
Yep, exactly.
We have the answer.
Yep.
Go for it.
Yep.
all here. Sports here.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. There was one, I forget even what the content of the thing was, but Sherry just laid it out basically like that. And the last word of the response was go, exclamation mark.
One of the questions earlier was what causes us to choose to put our attention on the train or
lovely image?
That's really good.
Yeah.
I've been seeing. I think it's the it's being an identity that's familiar and comfortable.
Yeah. The addiction to that.
The addiction to that, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's how I feel like life is right because it's familiar.
Yeah.
And, I'm in the dark room, but I don't want to be, and I'm really trying not to be.
Which is all part of the identity.
And it's
I'm someone who's in the dark room.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
And is trying really hard not to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've been... I realized that I've been kind of making different choices for several years now, maybe 3 years,
mm-hmm.
periodically making choices outside of the identity,
mm-hmm.
the default identity,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the discomfort in it, even though there's also some really fun in it,
sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But so I saw it yesterday. I had to drive to another town to replace a piece of infrastructure in my life,
mm-hmm.
Which required spending money. And things like ever more money as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. Which we have.
Huh?
Which we have.
Ever more money.
But in other words, we often lose sight of that piece of it. This is going to cost me a lot of money, and I have the money to do it.
Oh, okay.
Even though ego would want to have the attention on, oh my God, soon I'm not going to have enough money to.
Yeah, well, it didn't feel like I really had the money to do it, but, and it hasn't for a while. So I'm living on a real different edge than I ever did before. Real cautious before, you know, never charge anything and never buy anything more than what I have, you know. So there I was, and I had decided to buy the thing that was a little on the conservative edge in terms of, you know, well, we don't have a lot of money, so we'll get this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out with this one. And, you know, then the next default thing would be to get out the door and go, oh my God, what have I done? You know, and then I would start, I don't even like this, and, you know, that kind of thing. No. I love it. I love it. And I absolutely love it. And, you know, and the feeling is not that I'm doing something that's just, you know, sixes have the real cautious, afraid place. They also have one who just throws themselves
right.
Counterphobic, that's the word. And it doesn't feel like that. It feels like actually having sort of a deeper inner knowledge that life is going to provide. It has been providing.
Yes.
You know, I've been living beyond my means, but it's magic.
Have I been? Right?
Beyond the definition.
Exactly.
The scarcity definition. I've been living more in an abundance definition that somehow this is going to work out.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, if I run out of money, well, I don't know. I'll have a chance.
Yeah.
And
320 acres, but I better contingent.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just really fun to watch and see that pull towards that definition and how very kind of awkward it feels to make the other decision.
Yeah.
And yet to actually experience the freedom of not being, having to make that choice, yeah. just because it's a habit, it's, yeah. a, it's an identity,
yeah.
it's what we learned is how we need to be,
yeah.
and it is scarcity, deprivation kind of
right.
thinking.
Right.
When the life is so abundant, that it feels disrespectful not to actually acknowledge that.
Gosh, just the way you describe it, what a great act of love, you know?
It felt like that.
For Cameron.
Yeah.
But for life.
For life.
That, you know, it's an act of gratitude, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For all that there is, instead of getting small and
miserly
and hoarding it, yeah. and there's that sense of, okay, this is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one we're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just feels like such a, yeah, like you say, all of those things, such more caring and loving
yeah.
Orientation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, just that place of life is so outrageously abundant that it feels, I think you said, disrespectful.
Yeah.
To not be from that place.
Yeah, it's like not acknowledging how abundant and how well taken care of I have been, mm-hmm. even on a very minimal amount of money. I mean, the amount of money I live on, nobody would believe.
Uh-huh.
It's below poverty.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so rich.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And so,
I know, what is the definition of poverty?
Exactly, yeah. When they do the... You know, the lines, and they have dollar signs in front of them.
Yeah.
Way down there.
Well, and you can imagine that. And live in poverty.
And live in poverty, and deprivation, and scarcity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think about that all the time in Candelumba.
Mm-hmm. That's the biggest example of it, you know, those people dancing around, going
with the roofs.
They have every house, and they're looking at the roofs and singing, and... Yeah, because what more riches can you have than to have a roof over your head when you didn't?
Right, and the gratitude for it.
Yeah,
the ability to receive that as great abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what an amazing gift.
Yeah. So it's just really it's really fun to see the pull. You know, it's just that whole conditioning has been there so long, and how it's like, and it's getting easier because I've been doing it now for like, I think it's over 3 years, and not every decision comes from that place.
Sure.
But when I make that kind of more conservative decision, I mean, you kind of have to periodically when you're working with what I am, but it still comes from a place of abundantly, distributing the resources over there.
Yeah, what's being called conservative? Right? So one thing is called conservative, one thing isn't. Or is it just being appropriate to the moment?
Yeah, probably, huh? Yeah.
You know, which is the thing to do now?
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is the purchase to make now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what you're talking about is such a, it's just such an advertisement for being willing to just stay here and go through all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's that really strong, you know, at least lifetime, probably more karma. And so over the last 3 years, being willing to make decisions that are outside of that,
mm-hmm.
and how huge that is, how much we have to celebrate in that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and does it mean it magically, you know, shifts overnight, and that we don't get pulled back into it, and that, no, not at all, but to be willing to keep making those decisions whenever they're available to us,
mm-hmm.
you know, whenever we can see that the room is an illusion, that there's a door there,
mm-hmm.
to choose that, oh, okay, I see that, I'm mm-hmm. going to choose to... not take that habitual mm-hmm. route.
And to see that the decisions could seem like they're not that important,
mm-hmm.
but to be choosing an identity that locks a person into scarcity on any level is so good.
Yeah, that's what Renee was saying. You know, we think... we get talked into, well, this tiny thing doesn't matter. This tiny thing, this is just this, it's just this, it's just this.
Yeah.
But the this, of course, is all we have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's critically important.
Yeah, the process is the outcome.
The process is the outcome. Yeah. And as we begin to keep making the decision, you know, the quote, right, we know the right answer, mm-hmm. when we do that, we build momentum in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, help
yeah.
Karma.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.